This is the Good News Station, WCNO, Palm City.
Good news in shoes.
The following is a paid program. The content is provided by HF Martech. WCNO, its staff, management, and ownership are not responsible for the content. Investment involves risk. Prior to making any investment, an investor should meet suitability requirements. Past results are not necessarily indicative of future performance. Neither the opinions expressed nor the information provided constitutes a recommendation to purchase or provide investment advice. The material presented is not a substitute for obtaining professional advice from a qualified person or firm. Securities offered through Centaurus Financial, member FINRA, and SIPC. And now, the host of the Team Martech program, Joe Martech.
Wait a minute, you said 8 seconds. That was 3 seconds. You know, Tom, I need to teach you some math.
No, it's too late for that.
Too late. Yeah, you know, you can't teach an old dog new tricks. Isn't there lots of these sayings like that? Oh. Hey, this is the Team Martech Hour. And just so we know, today we have Vince Rosino, CPA.
Hello.
Extraordinaire. Forensic CPA. Ex-college professor.
But not at Columbia.
But not at Columbia. And Pastor Tom is trying to sneak out. Hey, you got caught.
He's just waving.
He's waving. Yeah, what happens is Pastor Tom is going to be answering the phone today. So today, folks, is a day to call a lot because I like to make him work.
Yep. And he needs to work.
He needs to work. You should see he's getting chubby. And you know, he needs this. If I can keep him running back and forth between these two chairs, that's probably the only exercise he'll get today.
I know.
Okay, class, write this number down. 1-888-221-8990.
He's laying down
in his chair, napping already.
He's napping already.
1-888-221-8990. Literally, Team Martech started on radio, give or take, in 04. We don't know exactly when, but we're using Hurricanes Francis and Gene as the start. The concept was very simple. Joe Martech's a financial advisor. I'm also called a stockbroker or a securities principal, which simply means lots of licenses. Lots of clients here, as in the Treasure Coast and also in 13 other states because people move, etc. But the reality is this. There's no such thing as one person knowing everything, except we do have an exception, you know.
Oh, one person does know everything.
Yeah, I know, but he doesn't always talk to me. You know, in fact...
But he walks on water.
But he walks
water,
on water.
You don't.
I don't.
You
I
walk
don't.
On ice.
I walk. If it's frozen, I can walk on it. You know, yeah. I've tried not doing that, and it's interesting.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, you know, when you're water skiing and you jump off the ski to go barefoot. I did this when I was a kid, and if you don't just jump properly, it's kind of a mess.
Yeah.
You know, and you know,
it can hurt.
Yeah, and that water is pretty tough. Mm-hmm. You know, when you bounce off of water, you're really moving too fast.
Oh yeah.
But anyway. 1-888-221-8990. So the concept again is, because I cannot answer all the questions people might have, I had to surround myself, in my opinion, with other local credible professionals. And I think anybody that's in my business has to associate or should associate themselves with other professionals because you want to be able to help your client. So some of the first members were Greg Fasula, attorney, because when we talk wills or trusts or anything legal, to find an attorney that is user friendly was just a wonderful thing. And Greg, I've known for over 20 years and just happens to be one of the better people alive, even in spite of the fact he's an attorney. And then Dan Warren, independent insurance agent, 37 years in business right here in Port St. Lucie. If there's a better independent insurance agent, I don't know who it is. He's got between 80 and 100 different companies, got a monster book. He's been able to do things for people that many, many of his competitors have not, and I just have tremendous faith in him. Ms. Victoria Lloyd, Remax of Stewart, only been a realtor in the real estate business since 1978, and for somebody 30 years old, that's really tough to do. You know, women.
She popped out as an agent.
Women don't age. It's, if you ask them, that's exactly right. And then Mr. Mike Polis, mortgage broker. And I got to tell you, what Mike has taught us about the mortgage business is unreal and what can happen. The magic thing about mortgages, folks, if you walk into your local bank and you want to get a mortgage, they take an application, sometimes a deposit, then 2 or 3 weeks later, they'll say yes, no, or maybe. Mike will tell you within 15 minutes and it doesn't cost you anything. And you know where you stand.
Yeah.
And it's just that simple.
Yeah, and he's very knowledgeable, always helped me out whenever I had questions for him.
He knows.
I've sent him many clients who are very, very, very happy.
Yeah. Mike's just a flat good guy, too. So luckily, over a period of many, many years, we've been able to assemble a very credible group of local professionals that have all been in business a long, long time. And I don't know about all of us, but I hope to die here, not necessarily soon. But today would be a bad day because it would ruin the show.
Yes, it would.
You know,
I'd have to carry on myself.
I know, but well, if I died after the show, it might be okay.
Nah, you're too young. You need another 30 years.
Oh, Lord, I don't want 30 years. That's too much. Scare me.
As long as you can afford it, you're good.
Isn't that scary? You know, as we get not younger, we don't get cheaper, you know.
No, we don't.
Yeah,
and healthcare costs are really what's looming for the people in retirement or going into retirement.
Well, after 65, they'll see Medicare.
But this doesn't cover everything, Joe, as you know.
However, you got a supplement to pick up the 20% that's not covered by doctors, or an HMO or a PPO, which basically takes very little or next to nothing out of your pocket.
Mm-hmm. Then what about long-term care?
There comes a big problem.
Mm-hmm.
Long-term care is a big problem.
Mm-hmm.
So, in fact, this is a subject. It's not a bad one. We never talk about that.
Nope. That's why I brought it up.
Yeah, well, that's a good one. And, you know, I just a quick story that's kind of funny. Some years ago, a fellow called me up, lived down in Mariner Sands, nice golf course country club exclusive community. And he lived in one of the premier spots. He was on a cul-de-sac in a very big house. And I go talk to him. He says he wants to talk about long-term care insurance. And I said, why? He says, well, nursing home costs quite a bit of money, and I'm not getting any younger, and I think I should get it. And I said, you know, in talking to him, I found out that he was basically a snowbird. He's back and forth to Westchester County, and he belonged to the Westchester Country Club up north, and he belonged to the Mariner Sands Country Club down here. And I looked at him, and I said, so what do you think nursing home costs? He says, it looks to be about $5,000 or $6,000 or $7,000 a month, depending where you go. And I says, that's right. I said, I hate to tell you, I don't think you want to get long-term care insurance. And he goes, why? And I says, well, the way I just figured it in my head, and I might be a little low, that between your place at Mariner Sands and your place in Westchester Country Club and your membership in both of these clubs, your kids would like you to go into a nursing home today because your cost is probably $25,000 a month to maintain your lifestyle right now. And he goes, well, you're pretty close. And I says, if you went in at $6,000 a month, you realize how much money your kids would save?
Good point, Joe. Yeah. I never thought of that.
Well, he was in an enviable position income-wise. He had plenty of income. He did not have a problem. And he never thought about the fact that he really would not. He was thinking he would keep all of this
stuff.
All this stuff.
And still getting then go into the
nursing. And still need to go into nursing. Wouldn't be, no doubt about it. That those things would be gone. Save all kinds of money. But the average person, let's say you've got $100,000 or $200,000 saved and you're old, and let's say you and your wife are making $50,000 a year between Social Security and pension and savings, whatever, and you're getting by and you're doing fine, and one of you decides to go in a nursing home, and you don't die for a good while, and it costs $6,000 a month. That's $72,000 a year.
Mm-hmm.
And you're making $50,000 a year between the two of you.
Right.
Well, all of a sudden, you're whittling away at the bank account, the savings, and the rule is you pretty much have to get broke before the state pays.
Right.
So very often, some of the planning that goes on is very, very important. Now, there's some... You might have heard the word Medicaid trust. Point is, there are some loopholes in the state of Florida that says, if I go in the nursing home, a married man, with me goes my income, my Social Security, my pension, but not my wife's.
All right.
Now, what also goes with me are what's called joint assets. So let's say we have a bank account in both of our names, and let's say it's $100,000 or $200,000. Well, one of the loopholes allows a pension income to be exempt if it's in a spouse's name only. So you can set up this pension income in the spouse's name, and that $100,000 now or $200,000 can be protected. And she can let me go in a nursing home right away, and I can get on Medicaid, which means the state pays, and she's one happy lady.
So how do you go about doing that, Joe?
Attorney.
Ah.
You know, now, and it's not a difficult procedure, but there are technicalities that have to be done properly. I do not do it. I know how it works, but I do not do it. Again, this is where, in spite of the fact we all don't like talking to attorneys, this is a critical thing to make sure that this thing is done properly. Because one of the major things that's a faux pas is called fraud.
Oh.
You might remember that word.
I remember that word.
The government doesn't like it if you commit a fraud. A fraud might mean you lie and you don't tell them about all the assets, but if you comply with the law, you can still protect them under certain circumstances.
Now, how would this pension income, would you consider annuities in this mix of things?
Literally what they do is it has to be what's called at least a 5-year immediate, which means I give the insurance company $100,000. They give me back the $100,000 plus some interest on a monthly basis over a 5-year period or longer, in the name of just the one spouse. So that's considered giving back $100,000 plus interest on a monthly basis over a 5-year period or longer, in the name of just the one spouse. That's considered giving back. A bit of a loophole. It's a bit of a thing that if you are in that position or getting close to in that position, this is where legal becomes very important. Very important. Anyway, and Vince was—he's feeding me there in case I got sidetracked there, because he knows the rules. Because obviously it's something you bump into quite often also.
I hear, you know, well, it's become more and more as, you know, my clients begin to age.
Yeah.
And these issues come to the forefront.
Yeah.
They want help on this stuff.
Well, and that's it. Now, also in Florida, let's just say I go in and we own a house together, my wife and I. Well, that house is exempt. That house stays in her name, and that's not attachable by the nursing home, or it's not considered an asset that has to be sold. So there's certain things that this is where the attorney starts to become earning his keep.
And it changes should you be, you know, your spouse pass, yeah, and you're the survivor.
Right.
Then things do change completely.
Yes, they do.
And what you don't want to do is what I had a few months ago, where somebody called me and said, I need some planning in a hurry. I said, why? Well, my dad's got a house, it's still in his name, he's about to go into a nursing home, and
yeah,
what do I do?
Yeah, boy. Yeah,
it's a problem.
Point is, here's where legal becomes critical. If there's a way to help people, and that's what our job is. That's what we think about. So 1-888-221-8990. 888-221-8990. And today is a good question, anything to do with taxes, whether it's starting a business, closing a business.
Mm-hmm.
Another thing that people don't often consider, they don't plan on doing it, but if you own a business and you sell that business to somebody else, it depends how that business is structured and how the sale is structured. There can be big tax implications or small tax implications. So,
yes, particularly in the area of partnerships, Joe.
Yeah,
I
yeah.
caution those who have partners and you have a partnership. If it's an LLC, the operating agreement is so important because
yep.
it defines the rules that you're all playing by. If it's a straight partnership, general partnership, then you've got the partnership agreement itself. And you must look at that carefully, because it's never an issue until it becomes one. It's when there's a dispute or somebody dies,
yep, yep.
or they want to break apart,
yep.
and they want to separate the partnership. That's when all these things come to play. We found an interesting thing in an out-of-state situation where a client had an LLC with no operating agreement. Well, what does that mean? Well, in that particular state, if you don't have an operating agreement, then the voting is per person, if you will, per capita. So if you own 60% of the partnership and your two other partners own 20 each, if you don't have an operating agreement, it's a third in terms of voting.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and it could create a problem. In each state is a little unique.
Now, let me ask you a question. Do these operating agreements get filed with the LLC when you first do it?
Yes, it does.
So that is something that
it can be changed. It's not, you can modify, not in stone. Of course. You can always modify it.
But it's not like a will. There's no recording of that with the court system or anything until you die. Then all of a sudden, it becomes a document.
Well, what typically happens is I don't know if it actually gets recorded with the state, but I do know if you form these things.
When you form it, yeah.
You have to have the operator. They ask you if you have the operating agreement. Right. And usually the people I use to form these things do produce the operator. It's usually standard template.
Exactly.
And then you modify it as you go. But you should have one, and it's very, very important. But it's these kind of things that don't arise until there's a problem. You know, you might just forget about it. Well, this is what we agreed to, and every year you divvy up the monies until one day somebody wants out.
Yeah, yeah. Or you get a divorce, and the wife says, hey, you know, that half of your share is mine or more, depending on da-da-da-da-da-da, you know. So you got to, all these things, it's how many times have we talked to somebody and they want to start a business, they want to buy a business, they might have sold a house up north, they want to come to Florida and do it. And if they don't look, you know, we often look at it with a rose-colored eye. You look at a new boat because it makes you feel real happy, and that doesn't mean that boat's going to float. It doesn't mean it's going to last. When you hire somebody like Vince, he's going to be much more objective because he doesn't have any skin in the game, so he's going to look at numbers and reality and do a cash flow and let people know where things are. And you have saved some people some big, big bucks when they started looking at the reality of that they weren't represented, let's say, totally properly.
Yeah, the other thing, Joe, is buy-sell agreements and trying to protect each other in the event someone dies or gets disabled, if you're in a partnership or you're in a company and you have key players. Most people don't look at it. They don't even think about it.
See, one other problem, let's say you have a successful business and one person dies and all of a sudden they were an operator and they're working and you now have a new partner called the spouse or the kids or who knows what, and that could be a major problem. Yep. But if you have a buy-sell agreement, sometimes with life insurance attached to it, that'll take care of certain things if it happens. We often call it a blessing and a curse, and that is having money or not having money. Both are the same. They can be good or bad or indifferent depending on circumstances. So it does pay to do your planning. I think last week, too, we got talking a bit about IRAs and then Roth IRAs, and there's also 457 plans. There's 401k plans, 403b plans. Basically, the rules are very, very similar, meaning when you turn age 59 and a half, you can start taking money out and you don't pay a penalty.
Correct.
But you do have to pay the tax, or it's subject to tax based on your current income at that point.
It's taxable income.
Yes. And in almost all circumstances that I know of, it's ordinary income tax. It's not any other form once it's in any one of these agreements. The exception is the Roth IRA.
Right.
And I've had numerous people say, hey, Joe, I've got an existing IRA, and I've got $100,000. I'm using my math. Don't pay attention to my math, folks. It can be $10, $10,000. It can be any number, but $100,000 is easy math. I've got $100,000 in this traditional IRA, and I want to convert it to a Roth. What do you think? And I'll say, well, the excitement is when you do that conversion, that means you're cashing it in, and you now have to pay the tax on all that money. Now you can put it into this Roth, and from that day forward, all that money is going to be tax-free, including the growth. How old are you? Oh, I'm 68. This is, if you were 40 or 30, it might make a very sound decision, but when you're close to exiting this world, secondly, and you're close to being retired and having a lower income, you have to calculate, what is my tax going to be? Hey, let's just take this example. Husband and wife, both on Social Security pension, making $50,000 a year, but they've got a $100,000 IRA. Well, if they took $4,000 or $5,000 a year out of the IRA, their taxable income would probably be very, very little.
Mm-hmm.
But on the other hand, if now all of a sudden he took that whole 50 and added it to his $50,000 this year for income, that might put him into another $20,000 or so he'd have to pay in tax right now. So how long would he have to live to make that $30,000 difference in a Roth make sense. And it had to be a long time.
A long time.
Mm-hmm. So all these things, they all sound good at the beginning, but it doesn't always work.
They're better suited for younger people, Joe.
Oh, yeah.
The Roth is, because you got a longer period of time to actually accumulate money tax-free,
yeah,
which is a beautiful thing.
Oh, it's a wonderful thing.
As long as it lasts, take advantage of it.
You know, what happens is, what we're saying is this. If you have a traditional IRA or any traditional type of retirement plan, meaning a 401k, 403b, all these numbers and letters that we were talking about, you put money into it while you're working and you don't pay tax on that money. It's tax deferred. Then when you start taking it out way down the road, it's then taken out at your tax rate at that time. Now, the average person makes more money when they're working than they do when they're retired.
Average.
So very often, having a traditional IRA might make good sense. So let's say you're working for the post office and you're making a good salary and you have good benefits and all, and you're going to retire with $100,000 or $200,000 on your house and stuff. The Roth may not have been a good move. It might have been a better move just to have a traditional. But on the other hand, let's say you have a business and you start off and you're 25 or 30 and the business keeps growing and you have a restaurant, now you've got three or four and life is good. When all of a sudden that Roth could be a really smart thing. There's all kinds of planning. Now, also, here's some numbers, because you can only put aside so much money a year into a traditional IRA. And I think the number, if you're under age 50, is around
5,500.
Yep. And if you're over age 50, is it?
6,500.
Okay. However, if you're, let's say, a sole proprietor in a business and you're making good money, you might set up what is called a SEP, S-E-P IRA, and I think you're allowed to put $10,000 or $12,000.
Oh, much more than that.
More than that.
Mm-hmm.
So the rules allow you to put more money aside, but if you have employees, that doesn't work. Because if you're going to contribute to an IRA under certain rules, you've got to do the same thing for your employees.
Well, it depends, yeah, what you set up exactly. If you're setting up a company plan, then it can't be discriminatory. You've got to let everybody participate who have more than 1,000 hours a year. You know, there are rules.
It's all the rules.
And you're limited, so you can't be top heavy.
No. So what happens is, oftentimes these rules the average person doesn't know about until it's too late. And when you start that business, or even during a course of a period of time that you're operating this business, here's where somebody like Vince CPA or Joe Martek Financial Advisor, we start to get more involved with you on a personal basis to understand long-term goals and how you're going to protect your family when and if you forget the if, when you die.
Oh, yeah. We're all going.
There ain't no if, right? There's no if, right? We're all going to go. That's exactly right. 888-221-8990. 888-221-8990. And this is a question that comes up quite often. Hey, I've got a 401k and I left my employer. What do I do? Well, the norm is, in fact, some employers demand it, that you roll it over tax-free into an IRA. Most of us call an IRA an individual retirement account, which means we control it. It's not controlled by our employer. The 401k are a lot of different programs that are set up through the employer. They have certain rules and restrictions based on what that employer did for his employees. But the IRA, you're controlling it. Because I've seen people with IRAs worth over $1 million because they were able to roll money out of deferred comp plans, whatever it was, and they had a pretty substantial IRA that they now control. Then it can be invested, well, almost any way you want. Now, when I say almost, there's certain investments that you're not allowed to go out and buy. Like, I saw this commercial on the radio, and I'm having a hard time figuring out how they do it, but they said, hey, in an IRA, you can buy gold bullion and hide it under your mattress. And I thought,
self-directed, they called them.
Yeah, I have a hard time believing that you can have something in your hand that you can go down to the pawn shop and sell, or down to the gold merchant and sell, and still have it in an IRA, because that money is very well very well documented by the IRS. Has to know where that money is every single year.
Exactly.
Because it hasn't been taxed.
I don't know if the physical gold or bullion is accounts for that. I mean, I don't think it qualifies. You may have to talk about investing in shares, gold shares.
Gold shares,
like that.
You can, but yeah. I heard this on the radio.
I haven't heard that, Joe.
I did, but I haven't heard it for a while. I think maybe that was a scam. And that's, you know, because
you're right. It has to be controlled. Otherwise, how do they know when you're withdrawing?
Exactly.
Go to your safe, pull out the bar, and go cash it in. Nobody knows.
Exactly. Exactly. I don't think so.
It doesn't work that way. Not in this world today. Maybe 100 years ago, possibly.
Maybe. Who knows? Yeah, I don't even know if they had an IRA.
They didn't have any back then. But if they did, it would be easy to hide.
Well, that's, you know, hiding gold bullion. Hey, like you said, under the mattress, under the safe, and wherever you want to do it. But, you know, I get a funny joke when people say, well, Joe, I don't trust the government, and I'm going to start just keeping gold.
Keeping gold, yeah.
Because, hey, when all of a sudden money's going to be no good. And I said, so what are you going to do? You're going to take your gold bar down to the Winn-Dixie and shave off a little piece for a loaf of bread? I don't think so.
Hey, you know, they did that back in the early 1900s, didn't they?
Hey, way back.
They used to go in with their little gold pouches and give a couple of sprinkles, and that's what they paid. It was currency.
There was a time that salt was used as a currency in different countries when salt was salt's a critical element. So anything that can be used to barter or buy things with, I don't care what it is, you know, that works. But in today's modern world, currency or coin appears, or plastic that has something.
Plastic that has more like it, Joe.
That has something behind it.
It's more like it with plastic.
Yeah, well, they're going to say less and less people are going to be able to use cash over
a
period of time.
Well, we're headed towards a cashless society anyway.
Yeah, yeah.
The government wants to obviously cut back on the big underground economy that's been alleged. so that's one way to curtail that activity.
Yeah, and they're moving that way. It's not a quick, easy move, but it is moving that way. 1-888-221-8990. So if anybody has questions on IRAs, quote, 401ks, rollovers, transfers, today's a good day to do it.
There's another strategy, you know.
Okay.
You know, you could set up a Roth IRA for your grandchild or something else, and it's going to accumulate tax-free.
And one of the strategies of that, let's say you are young and you put that money into this IRA and 20 years goes by and that child is not going to go to college, that child decided to be a drug dealer or whatever, you can do whatever you want with that money and there's no tax on it, rather than saying, okay, it's the kid's automatically and the kid is not flying straight. So there's lots of different options available to people, and our job is to educate, you know, and that's what we're here for. Another little thing that most of us don't think about until after the fact, let's say a husband and wife, he has an IRA, and by the way, you don't have partners on an IRA, it's either his IRA or her IRA, but government says if they're married and he dies and she's the beneficiary, it automatically becomes her IRA and there's no tax unless distributions are made. So no tax to have it roll over his name to her name.
And you got
to
be careful.
Or her name to his name. And you hit it. You got to be careful with that. You've got to make sure the documentation is there properly, because whoever is, quote, the custodian who's holding this IRA money has to report no matter what happens to the government. And with the power of computers today, it's almost instant that they know exactly what you're doing. So it can roll from a spouse to another spouse, and it also can roll down to your bloodline children, which, again, they can inherit this. Again, no tax. They may have to take distributions based on your age if you already took them out. But if you haven't, it becomes their IRA at their age. And in theory, these things can last in perpetuity forever and keep rolling down the line to the children, because the rules for an IRA are almost all retirement plans. I say all, but there might be an exception someplace that I never heard of, and that is when you turn 59 and a half, you can start taking money out and not pay a penalty.
Absolutely.
And when you turn 70 and one half, if you haven't started taking money out, the government says you now must take money out.
And you know what they call that? RMDs.
Required minimum distributions, RMDs. And I love the penalty. If you don't take it out.
It's 50%.
50%,
yeah.
It's
biggest, crazy.
It's the biggest penalty in the tax code.
It's a crazy thing.
And who knows who set these rules up? But guess what? They wanted to make sure you took it.
Yep.
And
it was severe enough that people would pay attention.
That does make you pay attention. When you go to file your taxes, boy, oh boy, that, you know, that becomes it. So, in fact, I have a client today, he's going to call me tomorrow. He's having a problem with his accountant. Can you imagine that?
Nah,
I can't figure that. Anyway, he's concerned about taxes and 401 and his either capital gain distributions and or ordinary income. So talk about capital gain for a minute.
Well, capital gains, you know, are treated favorably by the tax code. Depending on your income, it can be taxed anywhere from 15% to 20%.
Okay.
Which, depending on the bracket you're in, is a significant savings. If you're in an upper bracket, let's say you make $500,000 a year and you're in a 39.6% federal bracket, capital gains would be taxed at 20%. So that's quite a savings, almost half.
Right.
Half the tax rate. On the other hand, if you're in a low bracket, say you're making $25,000 a year, you're probably in a 10% bracket. So then you might be as low as a 10% or no percent capital gains at that level of income.
There you go.
So
yeah, if you fall below the threshold, that 15% doesn't count, but you know.
Yeah, you might be paying zero.
Might be paying zero. So the capital gain thing, and where does capital gains come in? Let's say you own stock, ordinary common stock, and it pays a dividend. And I think the rule is you're supposed to own it for a year.
Well, yes. In order to get favorable treatment, it's got to be longer than a year. You have to hold on to it.
They call
a year
it,
in a day, or a year in a second.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, exactly. And then you have this 15% or 20% capital gain rate.
Otherwise, it's all ordinary.
Otherwise,
just like any other income, it's like wages.
Yeah. So let's just say we open up the stock account today, and starting 2 months from now, you start taking a distribution of dividend income. Well, that portion would be considered ordinary income because you haven't held it for a year.
Correct.
But
that was the government's engineering to try to get you to think long term with these investments. They don't want you to be traders, because if you're traders, it's all ordinary.
It's all ordinary income. Correct. Mm-hmm. But on the other hand, certain instruments are always going to be considered ordinary income and not capital gain. As an example, if we have a stock and it's called common stock, almost always that is going to be considered capital gain as long as you live by the rules. But if you have a debt instrument, which can be a note or a debenture, that income is going to be like interest income from the bank. It's going to be ordinary income. So
it depends. It depends on the instrument itself, Joe, because you buy some instruments at a premium, but buy other things at discounts.
Yeah.
So those things represent interest adjustments, so those are ordinary.
Yep.
When you sell it, the difference between what you paid for it, the principal,
right,
and what you redeem it for is either a gain or a loss.
There you go. So let's say you buy $100,000 worth of one of these instruments, and 2 years later you sell it for $110,000, you would have normally what's called a capital gain.
Right.
Now that capital gain would then be subject to the capital gain tax rate at that point.
At that point, as soon as you sell it, and depending on your income that year.
Yeah.
If you got very low income, other income, it might be the time to cash in on your capital gain investments.
Absolutely.
Joe, because you're in the lowest brackets to begin with, and you may have no capital gain.
There you go.
Now, a reverse strategy might work on the other end.
I've had numerous times where people were looking at a tax problem, and I said, okay, let's take money out in December and take money out in January. We're going to divide it into two tax years. Mm-hmm. You can do it within 1 week, literally, the last day of December and the first day of January, within just a few days, but you're putting it into two tax years. So there's strategies you do the best you can that are 100% legal. It's definitely not illegal to avoid tax. It is illegal to evade. So it's amazing how they're both the same number of letters.
Avoid and evade.
Avoid and evade.
Yeah. But you know, you also got to be careful, Joe, with the rules that require you to hold on to the stock. The government doesn't want you, say, selling your stock on December 20th to take a loss.
And then buying it
back on January 1st.
Yeah. There are all kinds of little nuances.
To take a loss.
There are all kinds of little nuances, Joe, here. We would help you make sure that you don't get in trouble with the IRS, that you're doing things according to the rules. And that's where, again, there's no such thing as any one of us in the group knowing all of these different things. Different people have their different ballywicks. That's why a CPA becomes a critical part of this organization, this team of people that can help people. 1-888-221-8990. So speaking of which, I guess I see you're driving the bride's car. You still have the grandson?
My grandson is with us this week.
Yeah.
And so the car seat is in my car. So
exactly.
Rather than... hang on. Did you ever try to get one of those car seats in and out?
They don't make it easy, which I guess is good.
That's the point. It's supposed to be secure.
Yeah, yeah.
But, I mean, even my son-in-law had to tug away at this thing to get it away from the car seat, you know, the brackets to plug it in. So it's we kept it in
there. It stays in the car.
It stays in the car, and I'm driving my wife's little car around, which is fine. I like it.
Hey, besides, you don't have a choice.
No.
Pastor Tom, we keeping you awake?
You just woke up. You woke up from your nap?
Oh, what's going on, man?
Did you have a phone call there? Woke you up?
Oh, too bad.
That's too bad, you know.
We're still waiting for this phone call. Nobody's interested.
No, but hey, you know, after last week, everybody loved me.
Got to give that phone number.
Hey, Tom, what's that phone number? 1-888-221-8990. That's toll free from any place.
Any place.
1-888. And if you can't hear us, you can also bring us up online at WSTNO.com.
WCNO.com.
Yeah, that's it.
Wow, how unique that is.
That's a tough one, you know. You know, long, and I look up. I can look up at the wall and I can read. Well, WCNO.
No, at your age, it's pretty remarkable.
It's tough. I had to use one eye, though. I got to close it in, you know. WCNO.com. You can listen. My uncle's up in Michigan, and he always listens to the shows. You know, it's just kind of neat with the power of the internet what you can do.
They got a webcam at the other station, right?
Yeah, yeah. When it works.
So you can wave at your uncle and he can see what you look like. It's not a great idea.
Actually, today, our other show, by the way, folks, anybody that wants to listen to us twice today, we're on every Wednesday from 11 to 12 on WPSL, which is 1590 AM. But we also are on a sister station called WSTU 1450 AM. So we were on both shows today, both stations today, just because we were. But bottom line is, both of those two shows, if you just put .com after the call letters, you can watch and listen and to us live, no matter where you are. 1-888-221-8990. 1-888-221-8990. So 1-888-222. Tax changes
we're in a unique time right now, because with the presidential election, nobody wants to really get too involved with taxes at the moment. They will probably in earnest in January,
once the new administration comes in, the
committee chairs have already been making noise about the tax code. They want to change it, but we hear this every year.
We're going to cut it from 70,000 pages and make it 75,000 pages. That would make it easier.
They like to dub it the Accountants Retirement Security Act.
Yeah, isn't that the truth?
And so, I mean, I'm not complaining.
I know.
But it is complex.
Well, hey, and there's no way to keep up with it. It's impossible.
No. I mean, even us, they fire stuff at us every day.
Every day,
changes the government. The government sends us their own bulletins. We get them from our internal sources.
Yeah.
So we're getting bombarded every day with changes.
But the good news is, you know how to look this stuff up.
Well, I do. If somebody asks me a question, you know, not all of it is committed to memory, Joe.
Oh, yeah. Well,
one thing college taught me was to go to nowhere to look.
Isn't that the truth? Nowhere to look.
That's it. I mean, because nobody remembers everything.
Hey, speaking of investing, you know, and I talk about this quite a bit, and anybody that has watched the market, quote, for the last couple of years, has noticed that it really hasn't done anything, meaning it's been kind of flat. Now, when we say the market, just so you know, when we hear the Dow, which is most people know the Dow, it represents 30 big American companies. The S&P Standard & Poor's 500 represents 500 big American companies. And the NASDAQ, where they use that as an index, it's over 3,000 companies.
Mm-hmm.
So those are the three major indexes. And when a year goes by and the numbers don't change much, that meant the value of those stock in those indexes didn't go up, didn't go down. Now, it might have gone up a little, it might have gone down a little. Now, what makes a company's stock go up? Well, two things, but if we use logic rather than emotion, if a company grows and they get more and more profitable, it gets worth more and more money. The more money it makes, the more money it's worth.
I've got a question for you, Joe, and put you on the spot. Do you think that we have a bubble, so to speak, in the present stock market?
So I listened to a number of people. I have CNBC on all day long in the car at home. I mean, it's married to me and vice versa. And here's not a simple answer. When we use in the industry, one of the gauges is called a price to earnings ratio, mm-hmm. PE ratio. What's that mean? Well, it means the price of a share of stock, if we put it into the total value of the company, there's a ratio. Now, that ratio, if it's 10 or less, is considered very good under normal circumstances. That's considered good. That the price of that share of stock, if it's 10 or less, is considered company are 10 times that, all of a sudden, we now have a ratio that looks good. Well, Vogel, which is one of the big guys in the mutual fund business, old guy, said he thinks it's in bubble time because when he takes the overall price to earnings ratio based on not forward looking, but existing balance sheets, existing profit and losses, that the ratio is around 22 rather than 10. That means it's not good from a standpoint of strictly using that ratio. Now, when we hear 22, there are companies that are 30, 35, 40 that might be okay because it looks like they're growing like crazy and they're going to keep making money. And they're, you know, Apple was one of those that always was looking at, they're always bringing out new products. Now, they've taken a bit of a hit lately because they don't seem to have this continuity of new amazing products to make them keep growing. So the price to earnings ratio is a big thing to me personally when somebody talks to me about stock. Now, you can speculate because there's lots of stocks out there. Hey, just as a quickie, back at the height of the recession when the government was bailing everybody out, automobile companies particularly, the quickie, back not taking money from the government. Well, so I had clients and myself at that time. Ford Motor got down to about $1.80 a share. And it was called, boy, that's cheap. And it was. But is Ford going to go out of business? And that was in the height of the recession when the world was really in trouble. And I didn't think it would. And I had a number of clients that agreed with me. So we bought Ford at $1.80 a share. Now it got up to $16. Now that's like a 900% gain. So that's called a home run. There's not many home runs in the business. Facebook is an example. Mm. Came out at 35, went down to 17. It's about 100 now, or 75, yeah, somewhere in there.
100 something.
You know, guess what? That's called a home run. If you can triple your money in 3 or 4 years, that's another home run. How many of these opportunities exist is a good question. The other side of the coin is, people say to me, Joe, what do you think about getting into Facebook now? And I said, first of all, I don't understand how these things without bricks and mortar can have any value. Because as soon as you have something that works, somebody down the street comes up with a new one that works. Now we have Twitter and LinkedIn and you name it, any number of these things. So I'm not a good person to ask about that. If I was a techie and a kid running around with every piece of tech connected to my body, I might have a better personal feel for which ones are going to be the winners. The bricks and mortar stuff, like utilities, hey, when they got power plants, that feels pretty good. You look at some big companies like automobile companies or General Electric, you look and you say, hey, sometimes people watch very closely at these for entry points to buy the shares at a good price, and they're looking for dividends. General Electric, you look and you say, hey, sometimes people watch very closely at these for entry points to buy the shares. Here comes when you have to think about when it comes to pure stock, and that is the right time to get in, the right time to get out. People, listen, way back when Microsoft started, if you'd have bought 10 shares in Microsoft, you'd be worth a bundle today because it just doubled and tripled and quadrupled and back and back and back because timing was just magnificent.
Well, the reason why I asked you that, Joe, is because I know there's an average PE, and when you describe price earnings, to go back on that, if the price of the share, just for example, is $100,
right,
and it's earning $10 a share,
right,
it's got a 10-to-1 PE, right?
Right.
That's 10-to-1. Well, that's a relative value. You say, okay, you're earning 10% on you every year.
It's
pretty darn good.
Yeah.
But if you go down to 5 on that, so now your PE's at 20.
Right.
Maybe not so great. So you look at the overall market and you say, what's the average PE? And I thought that the average PE in this market is pretty high compared to history. historical trends.
And that's what they're saying right now, that the average PE is high. Now, if the economy was booming and we had a gross domestic product
and
that
therefore
was
your
4 or 5,
right?
Yeah.
Hey,
okay. That might look good. It might even be a bargain. But we have been stagnant for a good while.
So how do you explain the values going up in the market when the earnings are flat and the top line revenues are flat?
Well, that's because a number of people have enough money to be willing to lose it.
All right.
Which also brings us into another thing with a piece of stock called a stop.
Yes, stop.
Now, a stop, let's say I buy a share of stock for $10. I don't care what company. And you feel real comfortable about it. I feel comfortable about it. Everything looks good. But I say, you know what? I'm no genius, and you're no genius. Our crystal ball doesn't work. And if we really knew what it was going to do, we're probably not allowed to know that. That's insider information. You're not supposed to know exactly what's going to happen. So I say, okay, fine. Let's just do this. Let's put in a stop loss number that in case the stock goes down to a certain price, it automatically sells. That way you're protected. And people normally would be like 10%. If I buy it for 10, okay, if it gets to 9, let it automatically sell because I don't want it to get down to 1 and I lose 90% of my money. But I'm willing to take a 10% hit. Very often we go the other direction. What about a limit, meaning the price goes up dramatically and I wanna get out? If you can put in a limit that protects you, that automatically would sell when it hits a certain number.
I think what you're doing there, Joe, is you're putting in safeguards to counteract humans' natural proclivity to greed. And what you're saying is, you know, all right, I'm gonna limit my gain on the upside.
Right.
I'm gonna limit to 10%.
Right.
And that thing might go up 100%. You sold it out at 10, but under that strategy, in the long run, the theory is that you'll make out in the long run.
The key is
because there's a lot more to go down.
Back to the crystal ball. Yeah. You know, and there's another little rule of thumb. I was talking to a young man the other day that had invested some money in stock, and he's just a working kid, but he got an emotional attachment to a certain company. And I said, okay, it's tripled in value since he bought it. And I said, you know, if it was my money, what I would do right now, I would take whatever money I put in out. Take your cash back out. Do whatever you want with it. But now, no matter what happens, you have definitely not lost because you got your money back out, and you can leave the other ride.
Yeah.
And then you're working on their money instead of your money.
You call that house money at that point.
House,
right?
Money, exactly.
Yeah.
And that's not a bad strategy. That's not a bad strategy. How many times, and way too many times, have I seen people ride that roller coaster and they start off with $100,000 and all of a sudden they're down to $10,000? I've got a fellow right now that I've known for years and years and years that was misrepresented. I mean, there's no doubt about it. Misrepresented means lied to. I mean, I don't care how you want to cut it. They told him certain things that did not happen. And I said, look, you need to go back to the person that sold it to you and don't talk to that person. You talk to his broker dealer, and there's some liability there. They are supposed to make sure you know what you're getting into. And if you don't, they're violated rules.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of times it's called fiduciary. There's all kinds of things, but the bottom line is it's the responsibility of the seller, the broker, to make sure you know what you're getting. Now you're allowed to forget, but the truth is certain things normally are drilled into you pretty hard. Now a lot of these things are very hard to read, but some things are pretty simple on the surface. And what had happened was this particular fellow bought a interest or dividend product, and they quit paying the dividend. Well, what happened? The value of the stock plummeted because it was no longer paying a dividend.
Mm.
Well, he was not explained.
He didn't explain it right.
He wasn't explained right, and that's something you need to know. So that's why I normally look at these debt instruments today with paying 5% and 6% interest, which is a real nice thing, and they pay interest every 3 months. And the debt instrument, what it does, a debt instrument means like a car note, a house note. I loan Vince $10,000. He signs a piece of paper, says, okay, Joe, I agree to pay you that money back within a period of time, and here's the interest rate, and here's how I'm going to pay you. So we have a mortgage on a house that has a note. We have a car loan that has a note. Furniture loan, we have a note. So these things have usually a start date, an end date, and an interest rate. So I like these things, especially with household names like utilities or some of the biggest companies in America, because you're not in common stock. You don't own the company. You're not subject to the volatility of the market. You're in a debt instrument.
Except, Joe, isn't there is volatility with respect to interest rates, is there not?
No, the interest rate they pay is fixed.
I know, that's what I mean. I mean, if the overall market interest rates are going up,
oh, of course,
like the Fed is going to talk, they keep talking about raising rates, and if those rates filter through the general populace and therefore cost companies more money to borrow, so let's say you've got an instrument that's paying you 4 or 5% now,
pick a number.
And now a new instrument comes out that's paying 7%,
right?
All of a sudden, your 5 doesn't look as good. So don't you take a little bit of a haircut or a discount, if you will?
Well, there are other things that happen, though. Normally, what this happened was there were some during the height of the recession that were paying 8% and 9%, and they got called. Called means the issuer, the company that did them, because money was extremely tight during the height of the recession, mm-hmm. they issued these things paying a pretty high rate, but they had windows in there that said they had the ability to give you your money back in 2 years, 3 years, or 4 years. So I have not, of course, we haven't had any raise in interest rates forever.
Right.
It
hasn't been an issue up till now, last several years. But what about now with this current environment where the feds keep threatening to raise rates?
Well, they're going to, but there's going to be quarters of a point.
Oh, I'm granted. It's not going to be shock, but it'll creep up.
And they already did a quarter of a point, and it made absolutely no impact whatsoever on that first quarter rate. In fact, if Mike Paulus was sitting here, mortgage rates were expected to go up, and they did not.
Well, you see, they're not pegged to short-term Fed rates. Usually it's intermediate or long-term Fed rates.
But normally the intermediate or long-term rates have a correlation to short-term Fed rates.
There's that curve, the famous curve.
Exactly. Everybody loves that curve. When you start talking to people that know what they're talking about, they use words that nobody understands and they're not sure of either, but it makes them sound smart. But the debt instruments that I have, you know this. They're going to pay you that interest rate, and that's just what it is.
And if you're happy and you keep it to maturity, Joe, it doesn't matter, does it?
Well, here's what happens. I hate to tell you, the maturities are out 20 and 30 and 40 years, but they're 100% liquid. You can buy them today, sell them tomorrow. Hmm. So they're 100. The only ones I deal with are either traded New York Stock Exchange or the NASDAQ, so I'm not even remotely concerned about liquidity. And most of the ones I'm using now, in fact, all of them have call dates, meaning they can give you your money back in 4 to 5 years. Some of them as short as 2 years. So when you go into it, you say, hey, okay, we're going to make our 5% or 6% for the next 2 years. Then what happens? Well, they give you your money back and we look and see what happens. Maybe the banks will be paying 10%. Yeah, right. Anyway, the odds are not too good, but nobody knows what the future's what the whole. So all we can do is address things based on today. But I have a large number of clients that need income, mm-hmm. and they've got their savings, and they don't want to be in something that's scary like a company where they own stock and they're very, very, very volatile. But if they have a debt instrument that they're going to put $100,000 in and they're going to get a 5% or 6% interest rate and they're going to get a check every 3 months and it's exactly the same check, hey, you know, that makes living very predictable. You start adding up your Social Security, your pension, and this interest income, and now you can afford to eat. So I love these things. And what I'm looking at is for the next, at least the rest of this year, until the election is over, that I feel pretty comfortable that we are going to stay out of the general market unless it's specific stocks that have specific, like, let's just talk oil as an example. If you ever notice, oil's been going up.
Yep. What's it now, about $48 a barrel?
I think it's pushing 50 today.
Wow.
So literally, we all know what's going to happen. How if much and how fast and when has always been the questions. But historically, 5 times in history, it's done this big up and down, up and down, up and down, and it's not over. So some of the big oil companies were really, really good bargains if we'd have bought them 3, 4, and 5 months ago. Now, how much more is oil going to go up? Good question. I got 2 clients I'm talking to tomorrow that are asking me my opinion. And that's a good question because
It's one of probably the one of the most manipulated markets in, that are out there, Joe. Because there's no understanding this market. No, there really isn't. Well, I mean, they talk about fracking on the one hand. Yeah. The whole industry is producing more oil than we know what to do with.
Right.
Talking about China is really their economy is suffering. They're hurting. So where's the demand coming from? We don't know, but the price is going up. I mean, I don't understand.
Well, one of the things that's happened is, if you go to North Dakota, which had an unemployment rate of less than nothing, today it's tremendously high because they've stopped.
But
they've stopped the fracking. They've stopped new drilling. There are supposedly 70 companies that have gone bankrupt in the oil business. Well, and then what happens, when you sell a widget that cost you $2 to make for $1.50, yeah. You can only afford to keep doing that for so long before you run out of money to build new widgets with. And that's what happened. So the price, pretty close to $40 a barrel is the break even for most. In some places, it's higher than that. It depends on what it costs to get it out of the ground. If you do it offshore, it's higher than that. So,
and that's only break even, and nobody goes into business to break even.
No, you can break even for a period of time to stay alive, but all of a sudden, it catches up with you. Well, we're running out of time. Tom's flashing cards at us. He's waking up finally and decided to come and join us. His eyes are batting.
He looks rested. You had a good rest out there, didn't you?
You did a nice little nap. Tom's hiding big time today. I'm impressed that you haven't even said a word.
No, he hasn't come in. He has not.
Yeah, you've become rather mute.
He's not participated at all. Mute
boy. Well, all of a sudden he talked, but you didn't hear it because he's not near his microphone. So rather mute. That was it. But he is waving a card saying we've got about two minutes. Now, folks, write this number down. This is a big number. We're here to help, and you've got local professionals that have a lot of experience, and none of us are new in business. Everybody's 20, 30 years, some longer.
Some much longer.
Much, much longer. And Tom, look at Tom. Tom's been here for 104 years now. 27,
wow,
close enough.
27 years.
1-888-221-8990. 888-221-8990. Now, you can call that number anytime. Pastor Tom will take your name and phone number, and he'll have us call you back. So, in case you don't want to talk to us on the radio today, which seems like you don't, besides we don't have time anyway, you can call that number anytime during the week. Pastor Tom will take your name and number and have us give you a call back, and we're here to help you. Now we're getting a flash. He's going to come down.
We're almost there.
He's ready to flip it. He's going to go 1 minute. Whoa.
1 minute. There we are.
You know, I got to tell you, he does that well.
He does. You know, but somebody ought to tell him they have technology for this.
You know, he does have. How much did you pay for those cards 40 years ago? That you've never been.
You know what it is? You know what? We need to get some more listeners to contribute to the station here and donate to the ministry so that he can get an electronic thing up there we can look at. It counts down the minutes.
Wouldn't that be scary?
Yeah. Oh, he's got something.
He's got his $1 clock. And I think that's what that clock cost at Walmart. Hey, folks, listen, we want to thank you very much for listening.
Yes, absolutely. You know, God bless you all.
Yep. And remember that. We're here to help you. You've got Vince Rizzino, CPA, Greg Fasula, attorney. We've got Ms. Victoria Lloyd, Remax of Stewart, Mike Paulus, mortgage broker, Joe Martek, financial advisor. And Tom is really counting. You know, you can count on fingers. It's all over but the shouting. Until next week. Thank
Bye-bye.
You.
You've been listening to the Team Martek program. The Team Martek program is a paid program. The content was provided by HF Martek. WCNO, its staff, management, and ownership were not responsible for its content. Investment involves risk. Prior to making any investment, an investor should meet suitability requirements. Past results are not necessarily indicative of future performance. Neither the opinions expressed nor the information provided constitutes a recommendation to purchase or provide investment advice. The material presented is not a substitute for obtaining professional advice from a qualified person or firm. Securities offered through Centaurus Financial, member FINRA and SIPC, and Michael Paulus with East Coast Mortgage Lenders, NMLS number 353429. Tune in next Wednesday at 4 p.m. for the Team Martek program here on WCNO 89.9 FM. For more information, Team Martek is available at 772-678-7725.